Welcome, everybody, to the Dyslexically Successful podcast. I'm so excited to share the stories of these individuals, their stories of triumph and encouragement and inspiration to move through some really challenging things in their lives, whether it is learning to read or even just graduating from school, getting a job, being able to find their strengths that they have within them to be successful. And absolutely, I want to foster an understanding that their success is not in spite of their dyslexia, but it is because of it. And so I'm so glad to have you listening to these stories today. In this episode of Dyslexically Successful, we will be speaking with Ross Blount, and he is a wealth management advisor, and he will talk about his struggles in learning with dyslexia and ADD, which started back in the second grade when he was living in South Africa. He'll describe how it was for him in his younger years, and he was pretty much resolved to think that he was just not cut out for learning. But eventually he discovered that through his experiences on the soccer field and playing water polo, et cetera, and in math, exactly where his skills resided. So he realized that he had something that the other players and the students did not. So listen and find out exactly what Ross's dyslexic strength is and what he's going to encourage all of you guys to do to figure out yours and to capitalize on your dyslexic strengths. Welcome to the Dyslexically Successful podcast. Today on the episode, we'll be speaking with Ross Blount. And welcome, Ross, to the episode.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Of course. So this podcast discusses everything about just growing up as a dyslexic learner and what it has been like for you in school and then in your career choice, family, et cetera. So why don't you get started by just telling us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I grew up in South Africa and have been living in the U.S. for 10 years now. However, I first found out that I was dyslexic in second grade, attending school in South Africa with both dyslexia and ADD, and trying to cope with it through school, didn't have too many mechanisms or help in school. Just we didn't have those facilities, didn't have that support. Been just trying to figure it out mostly by myself, and So it's definitely carried through my adulthood. I'm now working up in Boulder. I'm a wealth management advisor. Right now I'm going through a similar transition with my oldest son having dyslexia as well.
Right. So going back to your schooling, I think in the United States, just recently now we're starting to identify and support kids better, but that must have been really hard to have to figure it out on your own. What were some of the strategies or things that you remember doing to get by?
So the strategy that the school suggested, which is something I did use, not that I encourage it, but the school told me just to take Ritalin. And, that was mostly for, I guess, the ADD, but it did help with the concentration. With that, I realized that it's going to take me a lot longer to get through my schoolwork. I have to work harder than anyone else. I have to put in more time. I have to ask more questions. So it just meant less time off the playing field after school and more time back in my room studying and working for whatever schoolwork I had.
Do you recall,
feelings like of being upset or mad or angry at yourself or angry at the school or anything?
I don't know if I was angry or upset. There were definitely times where I wanted to be out on the playing field or playing on the streets with friends, playing soccer. But so that would get frustrating, definitely. It was also very frustrating and at times upsetting while in school, especially during certain subjects like English literature, for example, where we had to read in class. That was always a very stressful period for me. I had classmates, I even had teachers who would mention the fact that I couldn't read, that I couldn't pronounce words. It was stressful and nerve-wracking as well.
So the fact that they pointed it out, that, oh my gosh, look at that, you did it well, was almost like, don't say that or don't bring that up?
Yes and no. Some of them, they did say, that's great, that you did that. It's almost like, well, that's low demeaning. But then there were times I had a teacher that I'll never forget in high school who riddled me for not being able to pronounce certain words or read certain words. And that, being in, I think it was ninth grade, and being told by a teacher that you don't know how to read and you don't know how to, that you're not going to make anything of yourself, that was a little disheartening.
For sure. I think that this was the ninth or 10th grade, so that was a while ago, and it's still affecting you today. So I think that's just really impactful of how words matter, and whether we're parents or teachers, like those little comments that maybe we're thinking we're trying to be encouraging, but how does the child perceive it? So I'm not sure that he's encouraging there.
No, definitely not.
But it was not well received. I mean, did it make you like, oh yeah, I'm going to work harder now because you told me I suck, or what?
I think it did subconsciously, because, one of the things he did mention is, if you don't know how to read, if you don't know how to get through this comprehension, you're not going to make it through high school. You're not going to make it through college. And I've exceeded in both of those and gone far beyond. Every time I do achieve something, I was like, that's on you, So I think definitely subconsciously it does. But it's not my main motivation for trying to be successful.
Right. Well, that's good, because, you could have taken it like, well, that's true. I can't read. I can't comprehend. I'm not going to be anything. Or you could have, you did what you did, like, all right, this is a struggle I have, but I'm going to prove them wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to work harder. And like the things you said, and take more time. I'm curious about the Ritalin, because I have never taken medication for concentration, although I'm interested, like, would that really help me concentrate more and not be so flighty, or not? So do you, pros and cons for the medication when you were a kid, do you have a recollection of, like, how that changed you?
I think it, I was second grade at the time when I started, and so I don't recall exactly how it changed me, but there was a period in time, straight after high school, I stopped it. And then going through college, I think it was my second year in college, through finals, the doctor had again recommended Ritalin. And I think that's when I realized, how it affected me. It did help me with concentration to an extent, but there were also so many other side effects, bad side effects that it affected me. And, you know, that made me think I stopped it almost immediately in college. I didn't want to continue just because of those side effects. Although it may have helped just a fraction with concentration, the side effects, the negative side effects were far outweighing. So I wouldn't recommend it to anyone. You know, I know everyone's body reacts differently, but it was not a good experience for me.
Right. And that's a really good observation that you had taken it from the second grade and all the way through high school.
Yep.
And then you stopped, and then in college, during a stressful period of the finals, the doctor's like, well, get back on your Ritalin.
Mm-hmm.
So in essence, like, you didn't learn anything. You didn't develop any, like, real coping strategies to help you focus during that whole time you were on the Ritalin. Like, the drug was giving you that focus, but it's not like because you took the drug, you were able to focus better. You were dependent on the drug, essentially.
Correct. Yeah. I think you're exactly right there. It definitely didn't help my situation. It may have given me an extra few minutes of concentration, but, you know, even in school and in high school, they just kept upping the dosage because it wasn't working. And they kept saying, well, if you take a little bit more, or if you take a little bit more, you know, that's going to make a difference. And at the end of the day, there was a difference, but it was not substantial by any means. I would have been just as well off without it, if not better, because of all the side effects.
Right. I think that's an important viewpoint to have. I mean, especially since you have the comparison of what you were like on it and then off of it and on it again. And as an adult. So like, obviously if we're talking to a young child, we could say, well, they don't like to be on it, but they need it anyway.
Yeah.
But you have that perspective looking back at it, and I thank you for sharing your experience with that.
Yeah.
So, you know, thinking about, again, you as a child, you said you had a lot of frustrations. Anything else come to mind as far as like, how did you identify as a child with dyslexia, or did you identify yourself just as someone who was stupid, or how did that affect you as you were growing up?
No, I'm not sure. I don't think I realized exactly what it meant to be dyslexic. I knew I had dyslexia, and it definitely affected, you know, school and work, etc. But I think there were times as well that I thought, well, you know, I'm just not cut out for this, being school or learning. You know, I was always heavily involved in sport. You know, I was pretty good at sport. I was in a lot of teams throughout school and in college and after school. So I don't know if I ever thought of myself as dumb or stupid. I almost accepted it that I just have to work a lot harder than everyone else. I am a slow learner. That was always my saying. I'm just a slow learner. And it's true. I did take longer to learn a comprehension or a math equation or whatever it was. I also realized that having that grit and being able to push through that was going to pay out in the end. You know, whether it was just getting through college or getting through school or teaching me life lessons. And I think it even transferred onto the sports field and, you know, into the sports I had, because I pushed a lot harder. I knew how to push myself, both mentally and physically.
Well, that's a bonus. Who in your life helped you kind of develop that grit?
I don't know. I think there was more self motivation than anything else. You know, obviously, my parents encouraged me. But you know, I don't think they realized or they knew how to handle the situation either. But fortunately, my parents are both, they were both very hardworking individuals. So I saw, you know, and they were both very successful in their careers. So I saw what hard work can do. So I think that, you know, just transferred over to my current, or at the time, my current situation of just getting through schoolwork and pushing through and working hard.
Right. And I think that's important too. Like, leading by example for our kids is extremely important. Like, we can say every day, like, do good, keep trying, but what are we modeling ourselves? So that's wonderful that you were able, because I think we pick up on that even more than what's being told to us.
Yep.
So very good.
Sure, definitely.
So what drew you to your career choice?
So with, I think, not being able to, well, I struggled with these science subjects. It was way too much studying that I, you know, that I could remember or that I could handle. So I was always good at the numbers. I was able to conceptualize numbers, you know, play them in my head, especially when looking at solutions. So, and it was something I enjoyed because it was actually a subject that I was good at. It was pretty much the only subject in school that I was really good at, and I enjoyed it. You know, there was, I think, one of the, I would say, the powers of dyslexia is that you're able to think in a different light than most people. And for me, it was being able to see different strategies in numbers. And so that's how I guess I got into finance. And so I started finance in high school and took it all the way through college. So it's always been a path. But I guess another layer is my father was, he owned his own wealth management firm in South Africa. So I almost grew up with that. Although I was never really involved in his business. I knew what he did, but I was never involved in it. But I was always intrigued and interested about, you know, what is he doing? How is he doing it? So I think that put fuel on fire. But yeah, I've been doing it since. I haven't done anything else, really.
I think that's important. I mean, you have found a passion, something that you enjoy, and you were able to make a career out of it. That's great. I feel the same way for my profession too. Like, you know, math was not my strong suit, but physical sciences, like, that is what I got. And like you said, you know, you just accepted how you learned. I felt I've always been a kinesthetic learner. I learned by doing. So I didn't put it together that I even was dyslexic. I just thought, oh, I don't read well. I just learn by doing. So,
yep.
You, and then, like you said, you kind of have to do that self-motivation. And I think it's great that you were able to maybe use the positive feedback that you got with math and sports, most likely to help you keep going in the harder areas.
Yeah, no, for sure. And, you know, that even comes down to, even now, in the industry that I'm in, I'm still having to take a lot of continuing education. I'm still having to get more licenses. So there's still a lot of learning involved. But you know, I try to look at the end goal for that. It definitely makes it a lot more difficult for me to get through all the study materials, and you know, cause a lot of it is also is just remembering the rules. What are all the regulations? And that is really challenging to me. But at least it's something that I've got a passion for.
Right. Makes it- that can kind of override some of those more challenging things. That's brings up something though, like what strategies do you have in place right now for remembering all of the rules? If you can't get them off like fast, what do you do to help yourself?
So for me, I've learned that I learned it in college where I cannot, if I'm studying for something, I'm not able to study the night before or a week before. For me, I'm always having to study. So every day I'm trying to learn something. You know, in college I always come home, study for a couple hours every single day, whether or not I had an exam coming up. And I think that's the same now, is, you know, constantly reading articles, listening to podcasts, and attending seminars. And it's, I think eventually it will sink in. But I know I just got to, you know, keep at it and keep doing it, even if I read the same article, you know, over and over, that happens. So I think that's what helps me remember now. But even so, if you were to ask, you know, tell me about whatever regulation, although I know what that regulation means, I have to think about it. I wouldn't just be able to tell you exactly what it is. I have to take a moment to myself, gather all my thoughts, gather all my my understanding of that regulation, and then come back to you. So you know, I'm that definitely is still an issue where I wouldn't be able to just tell you off the bat. I'd have to, you know, collect myself and then come back with follow up.
So I think that's a good point, because like if you try to like put yourself on the spot, that can create a lot of stress and make you like mess up. So instead,
yes,
giving yourself grace to say, no, I'm going to give you kind of an overview right now, and then I'll get back to you. So whatever your spiel is, I'm sure you have something that like sounds really slick, and then you can get back to them with all the details.
Yeah, yeah. And I do, you know, fortunately, where even though I meet a lot of clients face-to-face, I do a lot of follow-ups. So I say, you know, generally it's, I want to verify that the information I'm telling you is correct. Let me get back to you. And you know, I think most people are pretty happy with that. They'd rather you get back to them with the correct information than tell them something that's not accurate.
That's really cool too, that you can kind of realize that and understand that it can actually be an advantage. Well, for another thing, you get to have another contact with your client instead,
yep,
of giving them all the information at once and you feeling stressed. So I think that's a really smart tactic and a good workaround to serve both your needs and your client's needs. So
I think it's worked out well. So, and you know, none of my clients know that I've got, you know, that I'm dyslexic or that I've got ADD. So, they probably will never know. But it's, you know, as long as I figured out how to work around that and, in a way that they could understand.
Right. So two questions on that. Do you ever feel like that imposter syndrome, like all the other wealth management people are know more than you and like you're just kind of faking it, or do you feel comfortable in your profession?
No, I t- I guess two parts to that. One is when I am having to study for all my CE exams, that is where I feel the disadvantage. And knowing that, you know, some of my coworkers have to put in a fraction of the time than I do. However, I think I've definitely feel that I've got a greater sense of strategy. And that goes back to, you know, in high school when I figured out I know how to conceptualize and plan. So that has given me a big advantage in the day-to-day work of being an advisor, being able to not look at the big picture, think outside the box, and not just, you know, products, but more the overall strategy. And I think that's definitely given me a big advantage than most other advisors have.
Yeah, that's common to hear from dyslexic learners. There's a book called The Dyslexic Advantage, and they talk about the four mind strengths. And this is your perfect example of that big picture, that being able to see that strategy. They give examples in the book of people who like predicted 9/11, and so much so that, you know, the FBI has come into their door saying, what information do you know? But they're like,
yeah, wow.
I could just see all these, not me, but the person.
Yeah.
I'm like, and so that's really cool. I feel the same way in the sense of studying for exams. Like I had to really figure out which way to study. For me, it was recording the muscles and insertions and origins into a voice recorder and listening to it back.
Okay.
It didn't work, but it took me a while to come to that understanding. So for you, it's, you know, reading, listening to things multiple times. So I think just whether it's a parent out there listening or even a student who's listening to this right now, just know, like, finding your way to get that information to make sense to you is something really personal, but we can learn. And yeah. Then once we learn yeah. it, we have that advantage because we can see that big picture.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think, you know, nowadays, the schools haven't adapted for people with dyslexia. It's still the same type of learning system as it was hundreds of years ago. Nothing has changed. Children now with dyslexia, they have to figure out on their own on what works for them, you know, what strategies work. And it's hard, like I mentioned earlier, my older son is dyslexic, and strategies that may work for me is not going to work for him. And it's just trying to figure out what will work for him and what will help him succeed. And so everyone is different in that capacity. And, you know, I think just having this, the nice thing is now there is a lot more support than there was when we were back in school. So, you know, definitely learn from those and learn from other people and get as much information as you can.
Absolutely, because the information is powerful. I've spoken with other adult dyslexic learners who have said similarly to you. They may have known that they were dyslexic, but they didn't understand what that meant, or their parents. I had one woman tell me that both of her sons are dyslexic, and she asked her mom, "Hey, did I have any troubles with reading?" And at 40 or whatever, however the woman was, the mom said, "Yeah, you're dyslexic." And she's like, "What?"
Be nice to know earlier.
Well, that's the thing. So, I mean, I don't know if parents maybe feel like it's going to be putting our children into a box to give them this label or putting limitations on them. But it's evident that as someone who does learn differently, it's so empowering to know that it's not because you're stupid. It's not because you can't learn. We just need to figure out the right way that we learn. So I think it's empowering
exactly.
to have information. It was a big sigh of relief to have the diagnosis because it may put everything into place why I struggled the way I did. But going back to sports really quickly, so you had said that that really helped you kind of take those things that you learn in the field and back in school and vice versa. What do you think you learned the most from playing soccer or doing those types of extracurricular activities?
I think for a couple of reasons. One, it was definitely an outlet. I think that played more with the fact that I had ADD, so it was my outlet. I was able to, instead of being put on Ritalin and being told to calm down through drugs, being out on the sports field, that was my drug. That was my, my Ritalin. But I think also it's being part of a team and something different. You're not having to study, but you can still be out there, have fun. For me as well, a big part of sport, and still now I am very active, is it takes my mind off things. It takes my mind off the worry of, am I going to get through this next exam? Am I going to, what I have to study today? What do I have to learn? What do I have to do? And it's almost meditation. It's, my mind is thinking on being on that sports field or out in the woods on my bike, or it's the only time I could be in the moment. I think that's important to have that mental break. But then, going back to strategy as well, I think there's a lot of sports, especially the team sports, the soccer that I played, the water polo that I played. Again, I was able to strategize a game much better than anyone else. I knew what the next move was. I knew where I had to be on the field, and what players needed to be on the field or whatever it was. So I think that also was an advantage that I had that most other teammates did not.
Absolutely. I think that's really cool, because that's not something that you necessarily can learn. Well, I mean, I guess you can learn it, but it would take a lot longer than someone who just kind of comes naturally for you and you can take advantage of that.
Yeah. I mean, I was never a good athlete, I think I was able to strategize a game. So I knew where to be. I was always in the right spot at the right time.
Yeah.
I didn't have a lot of skill, but I also, again, had that determination, that grit, to work out harder and to push myself that little bit extra than what most people.
So that's interesting. You said you didn't have a lot of skill, and I understand what you're saying. Like, physically, you weren't maybe the fastest or the most coordinated or whatever, but you actually have skill. Like, the strategizing is a skill. And so I think that goes back to, like, our kids as learners, just in general across the board. Yeah, maybe they aren't the fastest reader in the group. Maybe their double scores are whatever, that they can't read nonsense words. That's what that is. I mean,
yeah.
Really, in the grand scheme of things, who cares?
Sure.
We focus so much on these little minute details that make our kids feel so, like, defeated, or they have to be pulled out of class. And I get it, but then maybe we don't need to have classes of 32. Maybe we should have classes that are smaller so that we don't have to pull so many kids out. It seems like the whole system, like, again, why is our system, like you said, hasn't changed in so many years? Why is it the kids have to adjust to the system? I think it should be the other way around.
Agreed. Yeah, fully agree.
Any ideas on how we can change that, or what you think would have helped you more in school?
I think just having teachers or staff that's a lot more aware, and even starting out with a schools that focus on kids with dyslexia, on, you know, their being able to change the way that the whole school system is run is, you know, it's not an easy task, but I think if we do it class by class or even student by student, and then eventually, you know, we could get to a point where there's an entire school that their whole learning system is different than any other school in the area. And I think that will eventually grow. I think there are a lot of kids out there that have the same struggles. But it's always been, it's almost kids that feel ashamed that they have dyslexia, which I can understand. But on the flip side to that is if kids don't speak up and parents don't speak up, nothing's going to change. We've got to try adjust the way that the school system is, that the learning strategies, how kids are based in school, whether or not they're going to pass or fail, it's so broad. It's in topics or subjects or areas that are really not going to make any difference in a person's life over the long term. I don't think for me, my worst thing to do in school was speed reading. And, fortunately, since leaving school, I've never had to speed read again. So, it was always something that gave me a lot of anxiety and stress. But it's never, I don't think it's made any difference in my life over the long term, especially in a career. And so, once I finished the school, that was it. It was done. And I don't understand why we still need to do those type of activities when they're not going to make a difference in the greater scheme of things.
Right. Absolutely. Basically, because everybody else is doing it. And then let's get faster at reading so we can read more words. Because if we read more words, we're going to learn more stuff. Well, that's may or may not be the case.
Yeah.
And there's lots of other ways that we can get that information besides just reading the words on the page.
Exactly. So
everybody does, like you said, learns differently. This morning, even my son has an IEP, and he was very upset about something the teacher said in class, that this assignment is due today and there's no exceptions. And he didn't feel like he could finish the assignment today. So just that, I understand that she wants everybody to try to finish today, but just to put it out there that there's no exceptions, like he felt like, what can he do? I'm not going to get it done today. And so he's spent the hour before school just in tears. So like you said, why create that anxiety for our kids? Because if we put them in that fear response now, the rest of the day, they're not learning, they're not listening. It just doesn't make any sense why we would set up our learning system to put kids, to set them up for failure.
Yeah, exactly.
So lastly, what would you like to share with parents, students, maybe your own son who are, dyslexic? What message would you like them to know?
I think it's a lot about what we have discussed already. It's there's just to know, first of all, that there's nothing wrong with you. It's see it as a strength. I know there's a lot of struggles. It makes school more difficult. But it gives you, I think there are a lot more positive effects than there are these negative effects of studying, having to spend more time in school. Those positive effects will definitely be your strengths, and they will play out and they'll benefit you in the long run. Being able to push through difficult times, being able to study more than anyone else, being able to learn your body and learn how your mind works is really important. And just realizing that and having the drive to be successful, that's what's going to make a huge difference in your life, in your career, etc. So, you know, just keep pushing at it. And then, you know, for parents, it's also, especially for parents who have never experienced this, who aren't dyslexic, it's, I know most parents out there are supportive, but it's, you know, seek for help, you know, help your kids learn different techniques, help them figure out what those different techniques are, and encourage them positively to, you know, spend a little bit more extra time studying or doing something. And I don't know if that's almost rewarding them for spend an extra 30 minutes or spend an extra even 15 minutes. And, you know, because that was definitely going to make a big positive impact for them. I think it's, you know, overall, it's keep pushing, keep trying, don't give up.
Great messages. Absolutely. I think, you know, in the moment, if our kids are shutting down, one option would be just to let them be and not come back to it. But the other option would be like, all right, when they're calm, like, let's revisit that. But maybe we need to revisit it more slowly or less information. So we want to support and stretch our kids. In the school environment, what I see is they're always like being met at this level where everybody else is, and they feel overwhelmed because they're not here.
Yeah.
So as parents, we have an opportunity to kind of figure out where they are at and work with the teachers or work with them one-on-one at home to kind of build them up slowly. I mean, that was the biggest problem, though, I had with my first son, is I could see where he was struggling, but I didn't have the tools at the time to help him. So it was a lot of reaching out to the teachers, keep asking questions, keep finding community groups who have more strategies for you to try. So very
good. No, that's great.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining me today. It was a great conversation. Anything else you wanted to let our listeners know?
No, I appreciate it. You know, I'm always happy to help out, and if anyone else out there has questions, I'm happy to help and happy to answer those questions or give any support. So, but I appreciate you allowing me to be on this call with you.
Okay, thanks so much. You have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Today's quick tip. So for today's quick tip, I just wanted to point you to a YouTube video that I recently watched. It is from the Wise channel, and it's entitled How the Brain Learns to Read. The professor who is speaking is Professor Dehan. He is a French cognitive neuroscientist. And this is back in 2013 that this was recorded, so a little bit of time has passed, and yet this information is not getting out to our schools. It's just crazy. A couple of reasons why I like this video: it's relatively short, it's just about 33 minutes long, 15 minutes of him kind of giving a lecture, and then another 17 minutes of questions from the audience. So a couple of the key points that he raises, well, he's got a nice slide that just kind of shows how a typical person's brain, when they see a word, how their brain lights up from the occipital lobe up toward the front of the brain to process the information. And he's not speaking specifically about children who are dyslexic, he's just talking about all children learning to read. And he also, so that's a nice visual just to kind of see how that process should look. But he also talks about why whole word reading is a myth, that none of us do that. And the fact that schools continue to try to teach whole word reading is really not based in any science at all, that at the very best we are always parallel reading words. We just do it to such a degree of quickness and speed that it seems like you're whole word reading. So I'll have the link in the show notes, and I thought it was a really nice video to watch and potentially share with teachers and other administrators, because the science proves that whole word language and whole word reading is not scientifically based. All right. Thank you so much for listening.